welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, May 20th, 2022. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is Food Insecurity. New program works with clinics to tackle food insecurity. By Michaela Ram, Dateline, Cedar Rapids. As expanded benefits end and costs soar, an area food reservoir is hoping to reach more food insecure residents by partnering with local healthcare facilities. The Hawkeye Area Community Action Program Food Reservoir earlier this year launched the Food is Medicine program, an initiative that relies on healthcare providers to screen patients for need and provides immediate assistance should individuals indicate they struggle with having access to food. The program has established partnerships with 10 healthcare facilities in the corridor region, including free medical clinics, hospitals, public health clinics, and the Linn County Access Center. As part of this partnership, the facilities agree to screen patients during appointments for food insecurity within their household. Because these screenings are coming from trusted healthcare providers, the program believes it will be able to provide help to more people who may not otherwise seek out food pantries, said Kim Guardado, director of the HACAP Food Reservoir. If patients do indicate they have struggled with hunger in the past year, they will be given a box of food before they leave the appointment. Weighing in at roughly 20 pounds, each box contains a selection of healthy food items that are low carb and low sodium in order to provide families with good ingredients for meals. Items include a box of macaroni, pasta sauce, brown rice, unsweetened applesauce, and instant oatmeal, among others. So far, providers have distributed about 400 boxes of food to residents across the 10 locations, Guardado said. In 2020, an estimated 1 in 8 Americans were food insecure, which is defined by the U.S. Department of Agriculture as a lack of consistent access to enough food for an active, healthy life. Individuals who are food insecure often face major health challenges. When forced to make difficult financial choices to meet basic needs, individuals will often choose to purchase food over medicine. In addition, the added stress is detrimental to health in the long term, according to Feeding America. We're always seeing people who have less funds available to buy medicine, and we are seeing more requests to help patients with copays and obtaining medicine for them, said Jamie Henley, chief operating officer at Community Health Free Clinic. If we can provide them with food, then that's one less stress they have. The Food is Medicine program initially launched in May 2021 after HACAP received a $65,000 grant from Feeding America and the Anthem Foundation. Its first partnership with the Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, but the program quickly ran into challenges because of the stress of the COVID-19 pandemic that was placing on the hospital, Guardado said. Mercy supports the concept, but it was difficult to ask people working long hours to do more things on top of the things they were already doing, she said. That was a big learning curve for us. We took a step back and thought, maybe the hospital right now is not a great place to start. So HACAP officials turned to the free medical clinics in the corridor, including Community Health Free Clinic in Cedar Rapids. The Community Health Free Clinic receives 25 food boxes each week to distribute to patients, which are typically gone within the first 3 days, said Chief Executive Officer Darlene Schmidt. We plan to participate in the program as long as there are people who are food insecure, Schmidt said. HACAP officials have grown the Food is Medicine program over the past few months as the need for nutritional support has grown in Iowa, a trend service providers are seeing across the country. Iowa and other states have ended participation in a federal program that dramatically increased SNAP benefits, also known as food stamps, throughout the past 2 years. As of April 1st, benefits to help buy groceries to more than 287,000 low-income Iowans statewide have returned to pre-pandemic levels. Universal free meals to students at K-12 schools throughout Iowa also are set to expire June 30th, another potential strain on families as costs of food, gas, utilities, and other living expenses rise. Since April 1st, Guardado said they have seen a 20% increase in the number of people accessing food pantry services in the HACAP service area. The grant to launch the Food is Medicine program has since ended. HACAP has folded costs of managing the project into its general budget, Guardado said, but the nonprofit is exploring other grant opportunities for the near future. The program has since grown, most recently signing agreements with the Obstetrics and Gynecology Clinic at the University of Iowa to work with high-risk patients, and there are plans to continue growing. Guardado said officials hope to expand the program to include all 7 counties within its eastern Iowa service region and is exploring opportunities to provide dairy and fresh vegetables to patients. "We know people who face food insecurity live in all of our towns," she said. "By partnering with the healthcare system in those areas, we can connect with those people." The next story is titled, "Judge Sets $1.5 Million Bail for Man Accused in 2 Killings," by Trish Mahaffey, Dateline Cedar Rapids. A judge Thursday set a $1.5 million bail for a Cedar Rapids man charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder in 2 fatal shootings that happened within 24 hours of each other in January. 6th Judicial Associate District Judge Russell Keast, during an initial appearance hearing, ordered the bail for Cassius Childress, 20, without hearing any arguments from the prosecution or defense. Childress was formally charged with the 2 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of going armed with intent. He was arrested on a warrant Tuesday by U.S. Marshals in Davenport. Cedar Rapids police have asked for the marshals' assistance in locating Childress, who they believed had left the area. Childress is accused of fatally shooting Cordell R. Lewis, 19, and Cavan I. Johnson, 22, on January 27th and 28th. Lewis's father attended the hearing but immediately left the courtroom, and the 2 Cedar Rapids police officers walked with him out of the courthouse. Lewis was shot and killed January 27th in the 300 block of 31st Street Drive Southeast, according to a complaint. Police found his body at 2:39 p.m. with 1 or more gunshot wounds. He died at the scene. A subsequent investigation revealed Lewis had been at 309 31st Street Drive Southeast with other individuals, and the murder weapon was found during a search of that home, the complaint stated. Investigators were recently provided surveillance video from the home that showed Lewis was shot by Childress. The video showed Lewis running away as Childress shot several times at him. The second complaint stated that Johnson was found dead at 7:25 a.m. January 28th in the parking lot of Cedar Valley Park, 2250 Blakely Boulevard Southeast. The cause of death appeared to be gunshot wounds. Further investigation and surveillance video showed Johnson had been at the Come and Go, 1420 Mount Vernon Road Southeast, in a vehicle with Childress within minutes of another video and audio clip that showed a vehicle matching the same description entering Cedar Valley Park and multiple gunshots being fired. Childress admitted being at the scene when Johnson was shot, the complaint stated. He was also recently identified by a witness as the person who shot and killed Johnson. The complaints don't provide a motive or the connection, if any, between the 2 victims or Childress. Linn County Attorney Nick Maybanks said Thursday they were associates but declined to provide further information. The only known connection between Lewis and Johnson is that Lewis and 2 other men were charged with assaulting Johnson on June 17, 2020. Lewis pleaded guilty to assault causing bodily injury, a serious misdemeanor, and served time in the Linn County Jail. Christian Emdy and Marshawn Jeffries also were charged in the assault on Johnson. Emdy and Jeffries were sentenced in January in the June 18, 2020 murder of Malik Sheets. Maybanks said Tuesday his office believes there are people who have more information about the shootings and wants to encourage those people to come forward and cooperate with the police. Childress does have some criminal history with guns. He pleaded guilty in 2020 to carrying weapons and providing false information to police. According to the complaint, he had a loaded 9mm handgun concealed in his waistband without a permit July 16, 2020. Childress also was charged in an earlier incident on March 6, 2020, for having a concealed weapon without a permit. Childress again had a 9mm weapon concealed in his waistband. District Associate Judge Casey Jones dismissed this charge as part of a plea agreement in the July case and gave him a deferred judgment and probation in November 2020. Childress picked up another charge June 2, 2021, of interference with official acts, a simple misdemeanor while on probation, according to court records. Assistant Linn County Attorney Molly Edwards asked the court to revoke his probation, but Associate District Judge Nicholas Scott convicted him of contempt and sentenced him to 2 days in jail. He was fined $250. His other misdemeanor convictions include theft, trespassing, and providing false identification information. The last story from the front page is GOP criticizes Mathis for business ownership claim by Aaron Murphy. The dateline is the Gazette Des Moines Bureau, Des Moines. Republicans are criticizing Democratic congressional candidate Liz Mathis for previously describing herself as a co-owner of a small marketing business, even though the company refutes the claim. Mathis, a state senator from Hiawatha, is running for the U.S. House in Eastern Iowa's new 2nd District. She is the only Democrat in the campaign and will face Republican incumbent U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson in this fall's general election. In myriad spaces, Mathis has described herself as co-owner or mentioned her family ownership in a small marketing business. On financial disclosure documentation for the Iowa legislature in 2012 and 2013, in literature for her 2020 Iowa Senate campaign, and on the business networking website LinkedIn, and in a 2021 podcast, Mathis's claims and the company's denial first were reported by Fox News. The small business to which Mathis refers is Amperage, a Cedar Falls-based marketing company that grew out of a merger with a company called ME&V. Business records for that company show that her husband, Mark, was one of the organizers of ME&V, but do not show Liz Mathis as being involved with the firm. A spokesperson for Amperage confirmed to the Gazette that Liz Mathis also was never a co-owner of its company. The company spokesperson also confirmed Mark Mathis used to be a co-owner of Amperage, but has since become a special projects consultant. References to Amperage have been removed from her LinkedIn page, according to screenshots posted by Fox News, which also posted a screenshot of Mathis's 2020 Iowa Senate campaign website, which said she and Mark owned a marketing and advertising company in Cedar Falls. This doesn't pass the smell test, and it's time for Liz Mathis to begin answering questions, Iowa Republican Party Chair Jeff Kaufman said in a statement issued after the Fox News report published last week. For a decade, Mathis has been touting her ownership of a business and even included it on financial disclosures in the Iowa Senate. When folks started asking questions, she backtracked. Fox News also reported that Mathis referred to a family-owned business in a July 2021 interview on Nate Kading's Real Success podcast. Mark and I are, we own a family business, Mathis said on the podcast, according to the report. Liz Mathis responded to the Gazette with a statement in which she says Mark Mathis sold his ownership in Amperage last year. In her statement, she does not repeat the claim that she was an owner also. Like many Iowans, my husband ran a small family business, and like many spouses, I experienced the stress and responsibility that comes with it, she said in the statement. As I speak with Iowa small business owners, I can relate to their stories of the ups and downs of the business ownership, she said. I believe we need to continue to cut the red tape for family businesses to grow and thrive. Although my husband sold his ownership in the business last year, I will take my family's experience and that same focus to Congress, where I'll continue to fight for Iowa's family businesses. Turning to page 2, the story is Mercy Medical Center names its new CEO, by Michaela Ram. Mercy Medical Center has named Dr. Timothy Quinn as its next president and CEO. The family medicine physician, who has been the executive vice president and chief of clinical operations since 2012, will step into the top leadership position effective January 1, 2023. Officials at the 424-bed hospital in Cedar Rapids announced their selection Thursday. Through our planning process, we have identified an exceptionally qualified and experienced leader who knows and understands our legacy and can also navigate Mercy through the ever-challenging future of healthcare. Al Ruffalo, chairman of the Mercy Care Service Corporation Board of Trustees, said in a statement, "I can think of no one more prepared than Dr. Quinn. He truly embodies the Mercy touch." Quinn will replace Timothy Charles, who plans to retire at the end of this year after 19 years at Mercy Medical. "Having worked closely with him for many years, I have complete confidence in his ability to build on Mercy's success," Charles said in the statement. "Of great importance, I am assured of his dedication to the mission of Mercy and the legacy of the Sisters of Mercy." Quinn received his undergraduate and medical degrees from the University of Iowa and completed a residency in family medicine with the Cedar Rapids Medical Education Foundation. He joined Mercy Care Community Physicians in 2005 as a family practice physician. In 2009, he was named president of the Mercy Care Community Physicians before taking on his current role as executive vice president and chief of clinical operations 3 years later. "I am excited about what is ahead for Mercy and our community. We have a number of initiatives planned or underway that will pave the way for Mercy to continue to provide innovative health care for generations to come," Quinn said. The next story from page 2 is County Process for Solar Projects Near Palo Begins, by Gage Miskiman. Linn County's review process for a pair of utility-scale solar projects near Palo has begun. The process kicked off Thursday with a meeting of the county's technical review committee, which will discuss the project and ask questions of developer NextEra. The projects in question, Duane Arnold Solar 1 and 2, would generate up to 200 megawatts combined. Duane Arnold Solar 1 would use 316 acres on an 857-acre area to place photovoltaic solar arrays capable of generating up to 50 megawatts. The larger Duane Arnold Solar 2 would use 815 acres of a 1,780-acre area, generating up to 150 megawatts. It would also have a 75-megawatt, 4-hour battery energy storage facility. While the technical review committee, made up of Linn County staffers, doesn't provide public comment or make recommendations, members ask questions of a developer's project application in preparation for it to go before the county's Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Supervisors. No date has been set for the planning and zoning meeting, but it will take place at the Palo Community Center, 2800 Hollenbeck Road in Palo. Linn County Planning and Development Director Charlie Nichols said a date will be announced soon and will take place in late June or July. It's a longer turnaround of meetings than was seen during the previous Clenera solar project process. "There's a couple of things leading to a longer time between meetings," Nichols told the Gazette on Thursday. "The Palo Community Center is busier than the fairgrounds, and our Planning and Zoning Committee members also have more scheduling conflicts, which I think is due to the time of year. Our department also doesn't have as much time to focus on a single project because summer is our busy season, so our turnaround time is a bit longer." At that meeting, public comment takes place, and the Planning and Zoning Commission votes to either recommend approval or denial of a project. county supervisors have the final say whether a project proceeds. While the process is identical to Coggin-based Clenera Solar Project's process that played out over the last year and ended in the supervisor's 2-to-1 approval, Nichols said he feels NextEra is already further along than Clenera was at this point. They took all the feedback and requests made of Clenera and incorporated it into their application submittal, and their application is very robust, Nichols said. The Florida-based NextEra submitted its application to the county in February for the two-phase project. If all is approved, the company plans to begin operations by the end of 2024. The company, which has operated in Iowa since 1999, previously said it plans to invest $800 million in the projects, including $50 million paid to local and landowners over the project's 30-year lifespan. NextEra's land leasing phase was completed last year after the company promised in public meetings not to use eminent domain to acquire the land. Last November, Alliant Energy filed a proposal to the Iowa Utilities Board to buy the project from NextEra and further develop it into the state's largest solar and battery storage facility. If everything is approved, NextEra would develop and construct the solar facility, but Alliant would own and operate it. The utilities board decision on that is expected later this year. Turning to the insights page, the Gazette editorial is titled Seek Balance on Recusals. Last week, four members of the 9-member Cedar Rapids City Council recused themselves from a debate and vote on two measures that would clear the way for an expansion project at the Cedar Rapids Country Club. It's notable, considering the sheer number of council members involved. Council member Marty Hoger recused because his lumber business has bid on the country club's project in the past and likely will bid on its expansion. That's a pretty clear financial interest in the outcome. Mayor Pro Tem Ann Poe, who lives in the neighborhood potentially affected by the project, opted for a recusal on the advice of the city attorney, who wrote, "Your status as a neighbor makes you an interested party. As a result, your private financial interest in your real property is clearly separate from that of the general public. And as the decision affects you as a neighbor, this is a conflict of interest under the city's code." Unquote. Councilmember Tyler Olson, a country club member, sought advice from the city's ethics board. It recommended that Olson and Mayor Tiffany O'Donnell, whose husband is a club member, could have a conflict, even though it's not possible to quantify in measurable financial terms, unquote. But the board argued participating in the debate and vote may involve the receipt by you and members of Mayor O'Donnell's immediate family of other consideration that is not otherwise a benefit or other consideration to the general public, unquote. So then there were five, led by Mayor Pro Tem Dale Todd. The council voted 3-2 to table the club's request for rezoning and vacating a portion of a street. Supporters of a delay echoed the concerns of nearby residents, worried by how a new large indoor tennis facility and other changes will affect traffic, parking, stormwater drainage, and the character of the historic neighborhood. It was the right call. We're less certain about the call for recusals. We respect the work of the city attorney and ethics board, but we also worry that setting too low a bar for recusal could create a precedent that makes it tougher for council members to do the job they're elected to do. O'Donnell recently told our editorial board she's worried about that prospect. So is Todd, who pointed to all the ties most council members have to community institutions and organizations. If simply being a member without a clear conflict becomes the rule, recusals could become more common. We simply hope, in the future, a productive balance can be struck between the need for ethical conduct and the community's expectation that their elected representatives can weigh in on public policy. This episode should spark a discussion. There is also a community letter on the Insights page, and it is by Marco Battaglia of Des Moines. How many Iowans could tell me about the evils of terrorism when they perceived it as being overseas, but some have trouble condemning it here at home? Racism is taught. No one is born a racist. It is a global problem. If we must ban one theory, white supremacy should be it. My grandfather fought Nazis, and I'm willing to do the same. If hearing the words critical race theory makes you mad, I assure you it is not what you think it is. CRT, for one, studies racial bias in laws and institutions, such as the how and why of incarceration rates and how sentencing differs among racial groups in the United States. Immigration laws and drug laws were sold to the people using racism. The systems were literally built upon racism. We have had separate systems for non-white people and white people for as long as we have had systems. Teaching this is simply called teaching history. If Governor Kim Reynolds wants to ban theories, bans books, and push religious beliefs on people, she should go spend some time in one of the remaining theocracies on the planet and report back about her experiences. And that is by Marco Battaglia of Des Moines. And the guest column is by Steve Corbin, and his piece is titled, Supreme Court Needs Reform. Virtually all Americans are in a tizzy about the forthcoming Roe v. Wade ruling drafted by Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito that was leaked to the public. Pro-birth advocates, comprised mostly of Republicans, are hopeful abortion rights will be overturned, while most supporters of the Democratic Party are furious about women's rights to choose being taken away. I'm glad a Supreme Court employee spilled the beans. Why? It reveals a serious and significant weakness in our justices. SCOTUS is the only public body that holds closed-door meetings, a grave violation of every state's open meetings law. The Supreme Court should, like all public bodies in 50 states did in 1976, hold open meetings of their deliberations so we, the people, will not be blindsided by their rulings. Let's explore several other reforms. First, the Associated Press reports a strong majority of citizens believe justices should keep their political views out of their decisions, but not even one in five polled believe they do an excellent or good job of that. Therefore, one reform needed is the legislation requiring 50% of the justices must be lifetime registered GOP and 50% Democrat. That would mean we need an even number of justices, so future decisions would require dialogue and consensus. The Harvard Law Review notes, legal culture has become increasingly polarized in recent decades, such that liberal and conservative justices increasingly operate in different worlds and speak to different audiences. Secondly, a structural reform gaining momentum is Supreme Court term limits or a mandatory retirement age. This reform is supported by 77% of Americans, according to fixthecourt.com. The third reformation is to impose ethics rules on justices, including adopting a code of conduct. Currently, the justices are the only judges in the country not bound by some code of ethics concerning their behavior, according to the Harvard Law Review. A code of conduct would have prohibited liberal justices from going on foreign trips paid by outside organizations, or the late Justice Antonin Scalia hunting with Vice President Dick Cheney just before hearing a case where Cheney was the petitioner. Additionally, Justice Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny, attended the January 6th Stop the Steal rally with Donald Trump, yet Justice Thomas did not recuse himself from a January 6th Capitol insurrection case. Fourth, on February 4th, 2021, Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, sent a letter to the court suggesting that a legislative solution may be in order to bring the judiciary's financial disclosure requirements in line with other branches of government if the court does not address the issue itself. Finally, on May 13th, President Joe Biden signed the Judicial Ethics Law on Justices' Stock Ownership Disclosure, a good start to transparency. Congress needs to put politics aside, do its job, and aggressively reform the Supreme Court. If not, we can expect more secrecy, political divisiveness, unethical behavior, and a ripple effect of law interpretation changes to continue. And that column was by Steve Corbin, who is a professor emeritus of marketing at the University of Northern Iowa. You are listening to a reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, May 20th, 2022, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Next, we'll turn to today's obituaries. Carl Russ Blum, Cedar Rapids. Carl Russ Blum, 77, of Cedar Rapids, died Monday, March 21st, 2022, at his home. A graveside service for both Russ and his wife Judy, who died March 5th, 2020, will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, May 21st, 2022, at Forest Cemetery, Oskaloosa. Tian Funeral Home and Cremation Service is assisting the family. Robert Bob Morris, Solon. Robert Bob Morris, 89, of Solon, passed away on Wednesday, May 18, 2022, at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, May 23rd, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Solon. Funeral Mass will be 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, May 24th, at St. Mary's. Burial will follow in St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery, where there will be full military rites. Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Solon is in charge of arrangements. Barbara K. Steger, Marion. Barbara K. Steger, 76, of Marion, passed away Friday, February 25th, 2022. Celebration of life will be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. May 21st, 2022, at 735th Street, Marion, Iowa. Marion I. Plecker, Hills. Marion I. Plecker, 100, of Hills, passed away on Wednesday, May 18, 2022. Private funeral services will be held through Gay and Sia Funeral and Cremation Service, with burial to take place at Memory Garden Cemetery in Iowa City. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made in her name to the American Cancer Society, First Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, or the American Diabetes Association. To share a thought, a memory, or condolence with her family, please visit the funeral home website at gayandsia.com. Robert Bob E. Caraway, Cedar Rapids. Robert E. Caraway, 82, of Cedar Rapids, died Tuesday, May 17, 2022, at Heritage Specialty Care. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, May 26th, at Mount Vernon Cemetery. Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the family. Martin Brown, Toddville. Martin Brown, 64, of Toddville, Iowa, passed away on Tuesday, May 17th, 2022. Family will greet friends and family from 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, May 22nd, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion, Iowa. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, May 23rd, at Toddville Free Methodist Church, located at 309 Johnson Drive, Toddville, conducted by Pastor Tim DeVries. In other notices, from Bennett, Iowa, Harley James Donald, 28, died Wednesday, May 18, 2022, Fry Funeral Home in Tipton. Decorah Dale Smith, 70, died Wednesday, May 18, 2022, Helms Funeral Home in Decorah. Lisbon Susan Lynn Stetsny Novak, 72, died Sunday, May 15, 2022, Papich Cuba Funeral Service, Cedar Rapids. Manchester, Joyce Joan Hansel, 81, died Tuesday, May 17, 2022, Leonard Muller Funeral Home, Manchester. and Marion Michael A. Meshach, 57, died Wednesday, May 18, 2022. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Marion, and Tipton, J. K. Miller, 84, died Wednesday, May 18, 2022. Fry Funeral Home, Tipton. Turning to the sports page, the state track and field competition, repeat champion is the title, by Rob Gray. 1/4 of an inch. That's all that separated Lisbon's Cole Becker from matching a Class 1A state record in the long jump Thursday in the boys' state track and field meet at Drake Stadium. No matter, the future Iowa State decathlete still repeated as champion, outjumping second place Alex Pitts of Bellevue by more than a foot. "I'm definitely going to ride this confidence right now," said Becker, who notched a top jump of 23 feet, 2 1/4 inches. Becker and the Lions carried high hopes into the 3-day event and ended Thursday atop the 1A team standings with 21 points. New London stood second with 20 points, and Earlham ranked third with 18. Becker later recorded a personal best in the 400 meters at 49.76, but finished third behind Rice Reynolds of Mount Air, 49.22, and Theo Mosman of Lawton Bronson at 49.75. "I was hoping to win," Becker said, "but everyone does." Lisbon's 3,200-meter relay placed fourth in a time of 8:23 to help bolster the team's hopes of building towards a state title. The Lions finished second last season. "If I go out and do what I usually do in my other two events, we should be good," said Becker, who also will try to repeat as champion of the 110 and 400-meter hurdles. Becker won 4 events at state last year, and his versatility serves as one of the reasons the Cyclones want him to compete in the decathlon after he graduates from Lisbon. "I like being good at multiple things," he said. Other area boys 1A top 8 finishers Thursday were Cy Hubber of Maquoketa Valley took 5th in the 400 meters, finishing in 50.95 seconds. Hubber also helped the Wildcats finish 5th in the 3,200-meter relay in a time of 8:27. Ethan Timms of North Cedar took 7th in the shot put with a personal record throw of 49 feet. "Each fast but smooth step is accompanied by pain. Then Auburnett's lacy neighbor soars through the air, and for a brief moment, relief mixes with exhilaration." Neighbor, who notched a second-place finish in the long jump Thursday at the Class 1A girls' state track and fielding meet, injured her right knee at districts, and at some point she'll need to make another doctor's appointment. But first, she'll need to find the time. "Hopefully," said Neighbor, a junior who notched a personal best jump of 17 feet 6 inches. "But we actually start softball next week, so that'll be interesting." Molly Joyce of Algona Garrigan won the 1A girls' long jump with a top leap of 17 feet 11.75 inches. South Winneshiek couldn't track down Pekin with the 3,200-meter relay, but did finish strong to take second in a season-best time of 9:55. The Warriors quartet of Billy Wagner, Megan Hageman, Josie Tieskotter, and Aaron Zabelka said, "It's the second time this season they've run the race as a group. We knew all year that we wanted to focus on this relay," Zabelka said. "And we knew we could do better than our 9th place last year." Wagner also notched a 7th plan finish in the 3,000 meters. Lisbon's Lourdes Mason also doubled as a medalist Thursday, earning 4th place finishes in the 3,000 and the 3,200-meter relay. "I PR'd it by like over 10 seconds, so I feel pretty good about that," Mason said. "And it's also pretty hot, so my goal was to not go lower than my ranking." Haley Meyer of Lansing Key earned 3rd in the 400-meter dash, finishing in 59.61 seconds. "It feels good to have a good start and a good mentality," said Meyer, who will compete in 3 more events on Saturday. Other Area 1A girls athletes who finished among the top eight on Thursday are Sarah Burton of Highland leaped to a third-place finish in the long jump, soaring a personal record 16 feet 10 and a half inches. Olivia Bolin of Belle Plaine also posted a personal best to earn seventh. North Lynn's 3,200-meter relay placed fifth in a time of 10 minutes and 11.51 seconds. North Tamas foursome in the 3,200 relay took eighth. Aaron Knipper of Maquoketa Valley finished fourth in the shot put with a top heave of 38 feet and 2 1/4 inches. In more news from the state track and field meet, Class 4A, a final victory lap for Prairie's Cortez in the 400 by Jeff Linder. The first of Gabby Cortez's lasts was glorious. "I knew this was my last 400-meter race, and I really wanted it badly," said the Cedar Rapids Prairie ace. "This year, I was ready to run the race." Cortez's final high school 400-meter tour turned out to be a victory lap. The University of Iowa signee won the Class 4A girls' race in 55.27 seconds at the state track and field meet Thursday afternoon at Drake Stadium. A fifth-place finisher in the 400 as a freshman, Cortez ran second to Norwalk's Claire Farrell last year. This time, she got out to the lead and turned the tables on Farrell, who was second in 56.06 seconds. Iowa City High freshman Annie Wiedemeyer was third. "I knew it was really important to get out strong," she said. "At the end, with the headwind, I put my head down and got through it." At last week's regional meet, Cortez ran on the sprint medley relay and the 400 and 1600-meter relays. She said Thursday the plan for the rest of the meet is the 800-meter relay and both medleys. West Des Moines Valley is the leader in the 4A girls team race through five events. The Tigers have 22 points in the bank, two more than second-place Waukee. Prairie is fifth with 14 points. Iowa City Liberty senior Isabel Woody tied for third in the high jump, clearing 5 feet 4 inches. "I'm happy with how it went, but I'm sad that it's over," said Woody, who will compete at UC Santa Barbara next year. "I wanted to end on a good note. The environment was great, and it was really fun competing with these girls." Cedar Rapids Kennedy twins Sydney and Addison Schwarzendruber were fourth and fifth in the 400. Emma Jones of Prairie was fifth in the discus. This section is titled Ford Rolls. This Ford most certainly possesses an overdrive gear under the hood. Iowa City High junior Ford Washburn stormed past West Des Moines Dowling's Will Ryan on the final backstretch, ran the final lap in a sizzling 58.9 seconds, and won the Class 4A boys' 3,200-meter race at the State Track and Field Championships Thursday morning at Drake University. "I knew I could outkick him," said Washburn, who was clocked in 9 minutes, 5.35 seconds, and ended up winning by more than 8 seconds. "Once I got close, I knew I was fine." Washburn's late race heroics helped move City High into the early lead in the 4A boys team race. Through five events, the Little Hawks have 25.5 points. Dowling is second with 19 points, followed by North Scott at 15, Ankeny at 14.5, and Sioux City North at 13. The Little Hawks fortified their point total with a fourth-place finish in the 3,200-meter relay. Matt Schackenbach tied for fourth in the high jump, and Tashawn McDaniels was fifth in the discus. While Ryan and Iowa City West's Alex McCain ran to the front immediately and stayed there through the first five laps, Washburn hung back. "I was definitely a little nervous," Washburn said. "They had quite a gap on me. I was thinking, they'll die off soon, right?" Washburn delivered his first surge at about 2,200 meters, moving from fifth to third. He passed McCain in the second to final lap and then roared past Ryan with about 250 meters to go. Linmar's Hayden Kuhn finished fourth. McCain was fifth. "It was just an okay race for me," Kuhn said. "I wanted to go to the front, then connect with the leaders. I didn't run as fast as I did at Drake, but state is about the place, not time. Iowa City Liberty's Luke Myers won the second heat of the 400 meters in 49.58 seconds, then watched as only one guy, Tyrese Miller of Ankeny at 48.71, top in that final heat. I wasn't expecting to beat Tyrese. I thought he might run in the 47th, Myers said. I didn't know if I could hold off those other guys. I'm really excited that I did. Last year's discus champion, McCade Jelinek, settled for third place in that event Thursday, despite a career-best effort of 187 feet 4 inches. Walker Whalen of Indianola won it at 204.9. Corey Phillips of Ames was second at 195.10. I broke the school record again, and I got some team points, Jelinek said. It was a good day. Some other guys PR'd it quite a bit. This is Title IX, 50 years. 50 moments in Iowa women's athletics history. Tissaga wins 2019 discus title. Number 35. Thrower becomes first Iowa athlete to be NCAA champion in the event. And the editor's note. This is 16th in the series counting down the top 50 moments in Iowa Hawkeyes women's athletics history in the 50 days leading up to the 50th anniversary of Title IX in June. By John Stepp. Going into the 2019 NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championship in Austin, Texas, Laulauga Tissauga remembers it being unbelievably hot. I was just freaking out because I was like, oh my goodness, how am I supposed to compete in this heat, Tissauga told the Gazette. It didn't bother her too much considering she left the Lone Star State with an NCAA discus title, a first for the Hawkeyes. Tissauga vividly remembers the feeling she had as she hurled the winning throw, which went 63.26 meters. I was very excited because as soon as it came out, it just felt good, Tissauga said. I knew it was going to be close to a PR, or even a PR. I just didn't realize it would be that far. She had trouble seeing the board that showed everyone's scores, but she didn't need to see when she could hear. The thing that let me know that I had done something great was hearing my coach in the stands, Tissauga said. Keep in mind, there's other events going on. I actually heard him screaming. That was her second attempt, which made for a nerve-wracking next four rounds. Every round, I didn't improve. And women were, Tissauga said. My heart was beating fast. I was sick in the stomach because I'm like, oh my goodness, are they going to surpass me? But by the time she attempted her last throw, she knew she was an NCAA champion. I went in there with this giddy feeling of, oh my goodness, I'm an NCAA champion, Tissauga said. I threw a terrible throw in my sixth round, but I just came out smiling. I was cheesing so hard I was on cloud nine. The same coach, Eric Wersky, who was screaming, hooting, and hollering after her second throw, was even more excited when she was officially an NCAA champion. It was really fun in that moment to see him act out of character, Tissauga said. I think he was more excited than I was. Turning to Class 3A, Spartans off to a good start. By Jeff Linder. Nerves? A touch of dread? No. Kaya Holtkamp suffered from worse. I had nightmares about this, the Solon High School senior said. I had nightmares about getting past, letting my teammates down, letting myself down. Ainsley Erzin will do that to you. She intimidates me, Holtkamp admitted. She's so good. But Solon's first three runners, Megan O'Neill, Gracie Federspiel, and Anna Quillen, gave Holtkamp enough of a cushion, and Holtkamp anchored in 2:16.7 to push the Spartans to the Class 3A 3,200-meter relay title at the State Track and Field Championships Thursday afternoon at Drake Stadium. Solon finished in 9 minutes, 34.41 seconds. A University of Arkansas recruit, Erzin ran 2:09.2 to move Carlisle, 9:41.6, up in the pack. Mount Vernon was third in 9:46.47. O'Neill put the Spartans in front with a 2:24.2 anchor leg, and they stayed in front the rest of the way. Federspiel ran 2:21.9, Quillen 2:31.2. We knew Erzin was going to anchor, so we had to build a lead as a group, O'Neill said. Federspiel said, Megan did a great job of pulling away. She really put us into a good spot. This is kind of unbelievable. It's so awesome. Holtkamp's split was a career best. I ran 2:16, she said. It felt like 2:30. Megan was great before the race. She's so calm. At the 4x800 win plus a four-place finish by Kayla Young in the 3,000 meters, put Solon into the lead after four events with 15 points. Julia Alberts of Decorah was third in the discus with a fling of 134 feet 11 inches. The 400-meter dash was contested after press time. Audrey Bierman of Western Dubuque was the top seed. Bobcats win. Eli Nauman politely placed a time limit on a post-race interview. I just have a couple of minutes, he said. I need to do a quick cool down, lower my heart rate, and get ready for the next one. Nauman started a quick two-race, short turnaround stint with a bang Thursday evening at Drake Stadium, anchoring Western Dubuque's 3,200-meter relay to a Class 3A boys' championship at the state track and field meet. Brendan Beagle, Nathan Williams, Dylan Schroeder, and Nauman ran in 7 minutes, 59.41 seconds, nearly 5 seconds ahead of runner-up Dallas Center Grimes. Our goal was to come in, give the baton to Nauman in the lead. Once we did that, it was good that we were going to get there. The splits were consistent. 2.6 for Beagle, 2.1.2 for Williams, 2.5 for Schroeder, and Nauman polished it off in 1:56.9. Nauman then cooled off and refocused for a 400-meter race that was contested after press time. Marion's Shane Erb has a ritual that he saves for Drake Stadium. No socks. I think that tradition is ending today, the senior said, looking down at a blister. Erb knew he was a long shot in the 3,200-meter race, but he went after it anyway. He hung with Dallas Center Grimes's Aiden Ramsey and Newton's Jackson Mace Maynard through 4.5 laps before settling for third place. Erb ran in 9 minutes, 39.82 seconds. Ramsey won it in 9:22.64. Mace Maynard was second in 9:30.71. I never go into a race thinking I'm going to lose, Erb said. It was hard out there today, man. I had nothing today, but I'm not mad about third place. The area, 3-4-5 area, finished by Erb. Washington's Lance Sabosky and center pointer Banna's Eli Larson, all Wartburg College recruits, was an early afternoon highlight. Another was the runner-up effort of Washington's Braden Hartman in the discus at 156 feet even. Newton was the team leader through four events with 20 points. Dallas Center Grimes was second with 18. In Class 2A, Hostetler repeats a 3,000-meter champ by Rob Gray. Danielle Hostetler grabbed a cup of cold water, poured it over her head, then collapsed to the ground. The Mid Prairie standout had just won her second straight title in the 3,000 meters at Thursday's Class 2A girls' state track and field meet, so relief merged with elation as she extended a historic family streak and drew in a deep breath. It's the best feeling in the entire world, said Hostetler, who now has shared an astonishing 16 state track crowns in various events with her older sisters, Marie and Anna. To go through all that pain and then to just be able to win. Marie claimed 2 state track championships in the 3,000 and 1 in the 1,500. Anna Hostetler won 3 state titles in the 1,500, 2 in the 800, and 1 in the 3,000. Anna's win in the 3,000 came in 2017, which means the three sisters have triumphed in the past 5 runnings of the event. Danielle Hostetler said her sisters returned home last night and delivered a pep talk to her. Just trying to make me out not to be so nervous, said Danielle, who battled a shin injury much of the season. It's just special to have them here, especially after she overcame the stress reaction on her shin and peaked at the right time. When I came back to running, I wasn't doing much, Hostetler said. I'm just so thankful to be here. Later, she'd share an embrace with her sisters. The streak continues, and there could be more to come. They'll be so happy for me, Hostetler said. They know how much pain it is, and they appreciate it. Tipton's 3,200 relay team felt good about second place finish, and Van Meter dominated the race, finishing in 9.33.48. The Tigers all ran well, and sophomore Olivia Edens provided a strong anchor leg to surge past Williamsburg, which earned third. Jessup finished fourth. Other 2A girls' top eight finishers. Macy Daufelt of West Liberty leaped a personal best 18 feet and 1/2 inch to attain a second-place finish in the long jump. The multi-sport star will play volleyball for Drake. And Monticello's 3,200-meter relay team finished sixth in 10:05.77. And that does it for the sports page and today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, May 20th, 2022. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.